Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman and welcome to What Women Must Know. I want to thank you for joining me for another great in-depth conversation that really is designed to educate and empower you so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your life, your health, your wealth. And I'm so glad you're joining me today because I have another fascinating conversation. Before I jump into things, I just want to let everyone know who may be listening for the first time to please go to my website, What Women Must Know, and also my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know as well, because I am able to send out all these archive shows to you. So if you don't get to listen to them live or you want a way that gets delivered to you personally into your inbox or your Facebook page, all you have to do is go like me at Facebook and opt into whatwomenmustknow.com and I will be sending you the archive shows as well as other information and blogs and the latest updates. I do a lot of posting on my Facebook page to keep you informed. So it's a good place to go, and I hope you'll go and visit there so you can stay informed. So staying informed, that's really what the show's about. And today we're going to have a topic that is a little different angle from what I normally have on the show. But it's a topic and an issue and a subject matter that really fascinates me. It probably fascinates you if you've been listening a lot. And we're going to be talking about, what's the real deal with Bitcoin? I have to say this is a really interesting topic for me because I've been hearing a lot about Bitcoin and in the world of finance, in the world of investing, in the world of, making choices that might support your financial future, Bitcoin comes up again and again. And I've even watched documentaries on Bitcoin. There's a great one on Netflix. And I'm still confused. So I thought we would have an expert on the show today who will help us navigate through this Bitcoin universe and let us know what is really going on and is it something that we want to look into? Is it a safe investment? What is cryptocurrencies? There are other cryptocurrencies out there. Should we look at this seriously or is it just something that we're being lured into that may not be all as it appears to be? So those are some of the questions I have for my guest, and let me introduce you to him. His name is Sean Worthington, and Sean is a tenured faculty member at the Computer Science Department at Butte College in Northern California and an expert in computer information systems. He is the author of the book Beyond Bitcoin, The Future of Digital Currencies, and is the creator of CloudCoin, the world's first cloud-based currency. So we're going to learn all about that. And it's my pleasure to welcome Sean to the show today. So hello, Sean.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. thanks for being here. It's interesting that you are, a tenured professor at the university and into this whole world. I guess it, being in the computer science department these days is an interesting place to be.
It really is. I've been watching for about 20 years cloud technology and now the blockchain technology come into society, and it's been very interesting, the developments.
So before we jump into the questions, about Bitcoin and what's really going on and who created it and, what the future is, I think it's really helpful for everyone, including myself, to define some of these terms that we are hearing a lot about, like blockchain, even cryptocurrency itself, so people can have an understanding as much as it's possible, because some of it gets quite confusing. Did you see that documentary about Bitcoin that was on Netflix or that is on Netflix? Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, even that one was really confusing, and, with all the goings-on of people inventing things and developing the Bitcoin and selling Bitcoin and losing Bitcoin. So in the end, I wasn't really sure what to do with Bitcoin. So can we start by just defining some of these terms like blockchain.
Sure.
Why don't we start there?
Well, we might want to start with defining money in general.
Oh, good. Okay, let's do that.
There's some Nobel Prize winning economists that have said that Bitcoin is not money. And Ben Bernanke, who's used to be the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank, he said that gold was not money. And so there seems to be some, you know, arguments about what money is. And what I've figured out is that monetary systems are basically information systems. They're databases. And money acts as data within those systems. And so money gives us the information that we need in order to make decisions that control our lives and that organize society. And so if we didn't have money, people would not know what to do, and they would not know which jobs to work at. They would not know which products to buy, and everything would just fall apart. You know, basically, we've got a computer in our heads, and money provides the data for us to basically build civilizations out of.
I mean, that's an interesting place to begin, because many cultures have used coins, like the Romans and the Greeks. They've used coins as a vehicle of exchange, but other cultures, of course, have used other things. Salt, I think, mm-hmm. at one time was a vehicle of exchange, and then there was bartering. So it's about finding vehicles that people can use to, as you said, make decisions or accrue things or develop things. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, there's been some tremendous amount of different types of currencies, but they all pretty much allow us to prove that we've done some kind of work. And so if I go to the market and I pull out some money, everybody knows that I've contributed to the economy, so I deserve to get something back out of it. And a good monetary system is able to tell who is doing the work and who's not, be able to reward the ones that are working efficiently, helps us to economize, and gives us incentives to produce good products and help people.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole topic on its own, because you look at the salaries of CEOs and you wonder, you know, if it's commensurate with what they're really doing, the huge amounts of money that now is circulating through those levels of corporations or even government agencies.
Absolutely. So money is monetary systems are information systems, and it is possible to hack them. And we have a situation now in which our government has basically granted a monopoly to our banking system. And what this allows the banks to do is to borrow or print up money anytime they want to, print up new money, and allows the government to borrow money anytime they want to. So it's kind of like we used to have a mixture of church and state in the old days. Now we've got a mixture of bank and state, and it allows both ends to hack.
Right. So interesting. And I mean, this is a whole topic on its own, money and the Federal Reserve. But the point that to me is always important for people to understand and remember or even get informed about is the fact that they talk about the Fed all the time as though it was a true government agency, but it's a private bank. It's a private bank that we're talking about. And we seem to have lost that line of distinctions, because, you know, and all the talking heads on the TV and radio talk about the Fed as though it were a true government institution, and it is not a government institution at all.
No, it isn't. And in fact, many people, including myself, think it can do a lot of harm, because it allows money to go into the economy in ways in which causes logical errors. And just to describe that situation and illustrate it, I could tell you about the island of Yap. Would you like to hear about that?
Oh, sure.
So in the 1850s, Europeans discovered a new island in the Pacific Ocean. It was called the Island of Yap. And in their village square, they had these raised platforms, one for every family. And they found these big, giant stones. They would roll these big stone coins from platform to platform every time they did a trade. And so this is the Island of Yap stone money that's pretty famous. And they asked the islanders where they got the stone. And they told them it's this special island that it takes months for them to grind out these stones using these special rocks. Whereas Europeans went there and they had iron tools and they were able to dig out coins and make these big stone coins very easily. And they came back with these coins and told or asked the islanders if they could trade the coins, these big stone coins, for a little island that was off to the side. And they agreed. And the Europeans decided to go and get some more. And they came back. And this time they asked the islanders to build them a house and to build them furniture and to be servants and build them paths and things. And the islanders were just crazy and happy to have all of this money, these stone coins. So they quit their farming and they quit tending to their animals. And they just went and worked for these Europeans building houses. And then months later, they ran out of food. And they all started starving to death because people that should have been farming were instead following the directions that the money was giving them, and they were building houses. And this is a very similar thing that happens to us. It happened during the Great Depression in the 1920s when the Federal Reserve pumped in a whole bunch of money that shouldn't have been there. And it also happened just here recently, 2008, with the housing crisis, where we get a lot of people that are following the money, doing the wrong things, making logical errors, and they're not doing the things that they ought to be doing, that they need to be doing, that really does take care of the economy.
And you make these illogical errors because you're given misinformation, I would imagine.
Yeah, imagine that somebody knocks on your house and they say, hey, I've got a briefcase, here's $1 million, I need to buy your house right now. And you're just like, sure, I'll take that. You take the $1 million, walk out, and then you notice that there's a helicopter flying above, dropping money onto the streets, and all your neighbors are gathering up in wheelbarrows. You just made a very bad decision because you could have just gone out there and picked up the money yourself. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of logical errors that the Federal Reserve can introduce into society.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've defined money. Where do we want to go next? What's the next logical definition? Okay.
So Bitcoin is a digital money, and digital monies have had a lot of problems. And one of the problems is simply that you can just copy and paste a million of them. So how could you stop counterfeiting? And you can also delete them. So how could you keep it? If your hard drive crashed, how could you make sure that you didn't lose all your money? And in fact, there was a company called eGold, and it was in California, and they put all of this gold into a vault, and they issued digital certificates on it, and they had this big economy going. It was like $1 billion worth of economic activity, and then the California state government just came in and kicked down the door, took possession of the gold, said it was illegal. They had a trial, turned out it wasn't illegal, but now that kind of system doesn't work because it's vulnerable to government attacks. And Bitcoin was the first digital currency to maintain what's called physical integrity and solve the physical integrity problem of money so that governments or nuclear bombs or hackers cannot destroy the Bitcoin. It still works. So that's what Bitcoin is.
Okay, but let me ask you some questions. There have been millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin that have disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Is that true?
So,
I mean, there have been ups and downs, right? There are things that have happened.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. I don't understand what it means for people who've invested in Bitcoin.
Well, certainly we can look at the blockchain and we can look at it because it's public. And everybody can read what's going on. They can see that there's numbers on one side and then there's amounts on the other. So you can actually see who's got what money. And you can also see the last time that they were transacted. And so there's estimated to be about between 4 and 6 million Bitcoins that have been lost forever that are not being used. And so loss is a big major problem with Bitcoin. That's a problem with physical integrity. And by the way, we have invented something called Cloudcoin. And with Cloudcoins, you cannot permanently lose the money like you can with Bitcoin because that loss, that's a big issue. Bitcoin has a public key that you have to be able to get into it. And it's not like a password that you can reset. If you lose it, it's gone forever. If you throw it away in the garbage, it's gone forever. It's a big risk.
Well, I heard of someone who had early days, bought Bitcoin, and somehow he he threw his computer away, mistakenly. I'm not sure how it happened, and the hard drive got lost, and it was supposedly put in some garbage recycling dump, and he desperately wanted to get in there. Have you heard that story? And was refused access, and there was millions of dollars lost of Bitcoin.
That's right, and that happens all the time. And, you know, it could be that you go and invest a lot of money in Bitcoin. You're going to get this public key, and you've got to protect it, because if somebody steals it, they've got all your money. So in the your efforts to protect it, you might encrypt it, and then you can't unencrypt it, or there's a problem, and you could lose all of the Bitcoins that you have. So it's a big issue.
Well, so can we go back to the creation of Bitcoin? There's,
sure.
Who was the mystery man who developed this? And we need to define blockchain technology as well. We haven't gotten there yet. So who was the mystery person that developed this technology?
Well, we don't absolutely know for certain, because the person that developed the technology didn't publish his writings in his own name. He used the name Satoshi, which is a Japanese name, and he didn't show up in any conferences, and nobody ever met the guy in person. So there is some evidence to show that it is a guy that lives in Australia, but a lot of people reject that evidence, and so we simply do not know. There's some ideas that it could have been created by our government, by the NSA. There's some ideas that it could have been created by foreign governments. And one of the reasons why they think that is that because it has this thing called the blockchain, and it's able to track every transaction. And it can tell who is buying what from who if you can put the name and associate it with the account number. Also, the blockchain is not quantum safe, and it is assumed, since quantum computers have just come on the market for retail, that our government has probably had quantum computers for maybe as long as 20 years, and that they are able to hack all of this encryption that the blockchain uses. And so they might be able to go in and monitor whatever they're doing. But we really don't know who created the blockchain for certain.
And therefore, we don't know if there are other agendas or other people or agencies that have access to this supposedly system that can't be hacked. Is that right?
That's right. And I don't have any proof for that, but there seems to be some evidence that the CIA was involved with Facebook. And of course, that was that's a great tool if you want to learn about people. And the blockchain, if you could use it correctly, in fact, marketers could actually go through it and look at it. It would be an excellent tool to figure out what people are doing. So it's possible.
So
it certainly would have a desire for it.
So it's not as safe and secure as we are led to believe.
Well, that's right. I mean, it uses something called pseudo-privacy. And pseudo-privacy means that you don't know who's doing what unless you can link the name with the actual account number, then you know everything that they're doing. So with Bitcoin, you have to sign up, you have to log in, you have to have passwords, you have to authenticate yourself. And so that's a problem with it.
And there's another term used called mining your coins. I don't understand that term. What does that mean, Sean?
Well, another way of putting that is counterfeiting. Because really what happens is that the Bitcoin system needs to have servers that are encrypting and decrypting transactions and storing them and checking them to make sure that they're good. And that takes a lot of processing power. And so how do you pay for it? Well, one way is to allow these miners, they're called, they're really administrators, is to allow them to be able to guess a number. And if they guess the right number, they get a free Bitcoin. And that's what happens. They spend all of this process power, all this electricity, with rooms full of servers trying to guess numbers to see if they can guess that number and win the Bitcoin.
Guess, now wait, I'm confused. Guess what number?
Well, what happens is that the Bitcoin algorithm generates random numbers and allows all of the miners to try to guess it. I'm sorry about that. And maybe we should pause. Is that okay to pause?
That's okay. You will know. Cool. Keep going.
Okay. And these numbers get bigger and bigger, so they become harder and harder to guess. And but as the price of Bitcoin goes up, it becomes economically viable to try to guess them and use all this electricity to do that, because the Bitcoin that they guess is going to be worth more than the electricity that they're spending. And so that's how the system pays for itself, is by basically counterfeiting, or allowing the miners to counterfeit.
Oh, wow. This is this is so confusing. I mean, if it's so confusing.
And by the way,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that Cloudcoin does not have mining. It has a mint, and it's all the coins are set, and you don't have to add any more, and the number never grows. And there's some other currencies like that as well. But Bitcoin is unique in that there's no growth at all.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Cloudcoin is unique.
And I want us to talk about what you've created, this Cloudcoin. But so people are buying Bitcoin. So they have to go online. They have to find someone or some person. I mean, who's authorized to sell Bitcoins?
Well, there's a lot of laws that have to do with that. And maybe the easiest way to find it is to go on something called localbitcoins.com, and you try to find somebody that's in your community, and you can just meet them at a coffee shop, and you give them some cash, and then they pull up their program, and they transfer money from their account into your Bitcoin account, which is means that you also have to have an account. It means you have to go and get some special software that allows you to create an account on the blockchain. You have to download 150 gigabytes worth of data. So it's going to take about 3 or 4 days just to download the program that allows you to join the blockchain. But otherwise, you have to go to an exchange, and the exchanges are controlled by the government, and they report to the IRS. And that takes about 2 weeks to sign up for them, because they've got to have all this documentation to show that you're not some kind of terrorist or something. And but if you were to go and try to buy some Bitcoins for more than $3,000 cash from like a neighbor, then you would be guilty of breaking some money laundering rules.
Wow. So what makes Bitcoin so expensive? What's pushed up the price? I mean, what's it at now, $15,000 for one Bitcoin?
Well, today, right now as we speak, the price of Bitcoin is diving. It's collapsing. The bubble has popped, and we've gone through the bull pin. So it's $11,000 that I checked last hour. It might be much down further last hour.
Oh, really? Why?
Yes. Well, it's because what happened is when Bitcoin was started, it was pretty much used by libertarians, people that wanted to get away from the Federal Reserve, people that were interested in privacy. And then these people started making money, and that attracted investors. People say, hey, he's making money. I want to make money too. And so they started making some investments, buying it, and then the price went up, and then people started mortgaging their homes and taking that money and putting it in Bitcoin and using their credit cards to buy it and all those other things. And that caused the price to go up even further. Until last couple of months, it went up hyperbolically. And, of course, that is a bubble. And it wouldn't be possible without the Federal Reserve allowing these loans to happen. But needless to say, the price of Bitcoin and other digital currencies went through the roof. People made a lot of money. But then it crashed. It started crashing a few weeks ago. And it crashed for a while. And everybody thought, well, it's a good time to buy. The price is low. Let's all buy. And it kind of bounced around for a while, but today it has plummeted. And it's a classical bubble pattern. And it was pushed up by investors who saw a way to get rich, and it's probably the greatest bubble since the big tulip bubble that they had in Holland hundreds of years ago.
Well, so let me just recap some of what you've been sharing. So it was believed that cryptocurrencies are free from the interference of governments and free from the interference of fees from bank transactions. But what I hear from you is there it may not be involved with fees from bank transactions, but there is an involvement with the government if you're investing in Bitcoin, and it seems like it's a really complicated process to purchase a Bitcoin.
Oh, yes, it is very difficult, very time-consuming, and the government has worked its way into regulating it simply by controlling the exchanges. And by controlling the exchanges, they know who's coming to them. They know how much money they're getting. The IRS came in and demanded that the exchanges in America hand over the records of all the people that were making over $20,000, and the exchanges gave them that. The United States government has even gone and arrested Russian exchange operators on the island of Cyprus and in other areas for selling, basically allowing Americans to buy on their exchanges. It's been pretty brutal.
Wow. So it's defeated the libertarian idea that first started the cryptocurrency paradigm.
That's right. In fact, in my book, I talk about how it could get even worse. And we're seeing this in Venezuela because they just created their own national cryptocurrency. And basically, they can assign every person in their country a address, which they know who it is. It's like a social security number on this Bitcoin. Everybody can buy and sell, and they can track everything you buy, everything you sell. They can automatically transfer money from one person to another person, as in taxes, and they can give it to their government programs or whatever they want to do. And this, of course, is going to change people's behavior, because you're not going to work very hard if you know that when you do, you just get it taken from you. And you're not going to work very hard if you know that if you don't work very hard, you're just going to get free money. So that's a very bad situation. We see that actually happening in Venezuela right now.
Wow. So the cryptocurrencies can be tracked. So you're not invisible, as it was first believed, that you can have these transactions without any government knowing what you're doing as a way to do whatever your private exchanges are. But that's changed, and it sounds like it's just another way to have cashless society.
Well, you know, the idea is that we don't have to pay any bank fees, we don't have to pay any taxes, we can buy anything day or night all over the world. And so we can even cut through a lot of regulations and tariffs that might otherwise be there. And but the governments tend to try to get control, and they have been doing exactly that. They've been using the blockchain as a way of proving that somebody committed a crime, and it's not helping criminals, you know, get away with stuff like it used to. And so certainly it hasn't lived up to its prior promise.
Well, that's, you know, so everyone's participating in this experiment that has a, you know, there's a belief around it that it does allow for more freedom and being exempt from government surveillance. Maybe it was like that initially, but what you're saying is it's evolved in a way that does have more restrictions and more surveillance of transactions.
Absolutely, and it's been taken over from by investors. So instead of libertarians who are concerned about that, you've got all these people that are basically wanting to try to get rich quick, and they're going to be very disappointed because they're going to lose the money that they've invested very quickly.
So do you think it's gone off the rails a bit? I mean, it started out as a good idea, but it's you know, things have you know, for whatever reason, kind of diverted its good intention? Or do you think it never had a good intention?
Well, we're not sure, because if it was made for controlling people, it certainly has that possibility. I mean, you couldn't design a better system, really, because it tracks every single thing that you do forever. And you cannot go back and change what happened. There's no deniability in that. And so it would be a very good tool for the government if they wanted to track people. But like I said, it is the first digital currency that solved the physical integrity of money, in which that it's impossible for, you know, as far as we know, for Billy to kick over his server and the thing doesn't work. If the state of California wanted to get rid of Bitcoin, they could not do it because it is on so many people's computers, it's distributed. And so it's you know, the first thing, but it just doesn't have the capacity. It's not scalable. The more people that use it, the slower it gets. It does not offer real privacy. But actually, now we're seeing other currencies like Cloudcoin that are able to solve those problems and do offer a real private choice.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Before I talk about that, I wanted to just say, so the blockchain technology is not a centralized system. Is that correct? Am I understanding it? It's on variety of computers, and there's not just one centralized computer that is controlling the information.
Yeah, so the blockchain is basically a database, and it allows you to write to it, and you can read from it and see what happened, but it does not allow you to delete records that have happened, and it doesn't allow you to update anything or change anything that's there. And just so it creates this permanent record, and it can run on one server, but in order to give it fault tolerance, it is basically mirrored or cloned to all these other servers. So if one goes down, the other ones are still up. So that makes it highly available and fault tolerant. But it is centralized in that there's just one piece of data, and it is then copied.
So if the system goes down and people can't, you know, for disasters or, you know, some, you know, cyber attack, something happened, could that compromise your ability to access your Bitcoins?
Yeah, and that's the biggest reason why Bitcoin is going down or has gone down, is because it only can handle 7 transactions a second, which is not very much. And it can be spammed, which means that people that want to try to bring down the system can try to do a whole bunch of small transactions all at once. And that will cause the whole system to get gummed up. And then you cannot sell, you cannot buy, you cannot do any transactions. The transactions right now are taking about 4 hours to do. And sometimes they take days, depending on what's going on. So it is a system that you cannot use to go buy a Pepsi at the corner market. If you wanted to buy $1 million worth of oil from Venezuela and get around the Venezuelan government, then it's perfect. You might have to pay $45 to the miners to make that happen. But, you know, it works in that kind of big type of sale, but not in any kind of retail environment.
So would you recommend people invest in Bitcoin?
Absolutely not. And so, you know, I would tell anybody that is in Bitcoin to get out, you know, stop what you're doing, go sell it, because it's going to, you know, it's dumping. It's a major bubble. And there are other currencies that do exactly what Bitcoin, or, you know, they do the same thing, and they do it much more efficiently. They do it much more cost effectively. And so there's no fundamental value with Bitcoin. This is the first one. It showed us that it can be done. But as far as being useful, it has already shown that it has serious limitations.
Well, that's so interesting, Sean. Thank you for helping to clarify a lot of these points, because I don't think most people understand this, nor is it easy to get this kind of information. You know, there's just so much hype out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and there are other cryptocurrencies, by the way. I mean, we've been talking about Bitcoin, but there's Ethereum and there's all these other types of currencies. And so do they fall into that same category that you talked about, that you're concerned about
Yeah,
and skeptical of?
so they all use the blockchain, and basically the source code for Bitcoin is open source. So if I wanted to, I could go and take that code and create Sean Coin. In fact, thousands of people have created their own Pot Coin and Name Coin and this coin and that coin, and they do it because they can hype it up, they can sell it, and they can make a whole bunch of money really quick. But really, what they're selling is, the dream of getting rich, some kind of get rich scheme, and there's not the fundamental value there that you would that would match that what you're paying for. Digital currency does have a value. It can give us the ability to buy things privately, but it's not a get rich scheme, and there's a limit to how many people are going to be able to invest in it and make money.
Okay, so let's talk about this cloud-based currency that you are involved with and I guess created. Are which
That's
is
right,
really
yes.
impressive. Sean, you sound like
Thanks.
a kind of normal kind of guy, but I would imagine you have a amazing experience and creativity and genius to put something else together. At least in my reality, I would classify you as a genius being able to do something like that because it's beyond my ability to comprehend.
Well, I certainly think I was the right person at the right time, working on my PhD in computer information systems, and then realizing that monetary systems are information systems, and that all of the rules that we apply to databases and to data, we just apply that to money. And so I was probably the first person to realize that and was able to put that into play and create a new currency.
Well, so okay, so help us understand what you created, what this cloud-based currency is, which you call Cloud Coin. Tell us about it.
Well, we started by basically writing down what are all the qualities of a perfect currency. And certainly they should not be counterfeited. So we created a currency that cannot be counterfeited. They should not be lost. Ideally, it would be nice if they could not be taxed or if they cannot be stolen. And we did not achieve the stolen one, but we made it to where it's private enough to where it would be difficult to tax. And we also wanted to be able to trade day and night with anybody in the world with complete privacy and instantaneously, and wanted to be able to be very little downloads, very little software. And we did create a system, a cloud-based system. And unlike the blockchain can tell if you counterfeited because you've got the money where its starting point, and then you have all these transactions and you track it through every place that it ever goes. And so you can look and see that one Bitcoin and how it's traded places over the entire lifetime. And that every time a transaction's added, the blockchain grows and your database grows and gets bigger and bigger. But with ours, we don't track the coins. Instead, we just have this counterfeit detection system. And when you get a cloud coin, you just want to check it to see if it's real or not, if it's counterfeit or not. And if it's not counterfeit, of course, you take it as payment. And once you've taken it, you can basically change all of the secret codes that are in the cloud coin so that only your cloud coin knows them. And then nobody else can take ownership of that. And so basically, with Bitcoin, you have to have an account. People have accounts. With cloud coin, the cloud coins themselves have these passwords, and these passwords go to clouds of servers all over the world. And there's 25 of them right now. And the number will grow as cloud coin becomes more valuable. But we've got them in Russia and Australia and Colombia. We've got them basically, every continent except for Antarctica. And if I've got a cloud coin, I've got all the passwords, I give it to you. Now you've got all the passwords, you just change them, and then the money's yours. And so it happens instantaneously.
So how is the value created, number one? And, well, let me just start there. How is the value created? So you give money, you put money into an account, and you buy your cloud coins. So from
well, actually, what's different than that from the beginning, we think that money is to demonstrate that we've created some kind of value for society. And so if I show you that I've got $1,000, you assume that I didn't steal it and that I should get to buy something at a store for that. And with CloudCoin, what we did is we are spending it into existence. And so if you're a system administrator or a company that provides cloud services, then we pay you in CloudCoin. If you are a software developer and you get paid in CloudCoin, if you're a quality software quality guy or UI guy, you get paid in CloudCoin. If you're an artist, you can get paid in CloudCoin. So we're just basically getting the money out there by paying people to make CloudCoin more valuable. And then they could turn around and sell it to other people for other things. And that's how we're rolling out the CloudCoins.
So are people like trading services using CloudCoins? Do you get money? It costs money to purchase CloudCoins. Do you get money back? Can you turn it back into money, or do you turn it into services or products that you can exchange?
So ultimately, the CloudCoin should be something that is just like the dollar. You get it and you use it and you don't exchange it for anything else because you're happy with it, that it's good money that allows you to buy things privately and successfully. But there are some people, you know, getting people to accept cloud coins is not automatic. When you go to pay your rent, they might not accept it. And so they might accept some, but they might not take the whole thing. And so that there's the it's necessary to have exchanges and be able to exchange it from dollars into cloud coins and back and forth. And that's the infrastructure that we're building right now. And once that gets done, then cloud coins will be very attractive because they'll be able to quickly go back and forth.
So it's like a Bitcoin, but it has a there's some significant differences that you described, but it can be used as – so it's not a cryptocurrency. What would you define it as? A cloud-based currency, I guess, right? It's in the cloud.
That's what I call it. I call it a cloud money or cloud currency.
Because it's in the cloud.
It's the first of its kind.
So it's held – I mean, the cloud is a online server that people have access to, right? I mean, isn't that correct when you talk about the cloud?
That's right. So a cloud is a group of servers that are usually fault tolerant, which means they cannot be taken down. And even with nuclear bombs or governments come in and raid or people get shot or hit by buses or something, the data still stays up there and it can self-heal. So I've actually got a patent on this digital currency. And part of it is that these clouds can, if they're taken offline by force, they can self-heal.
Wow, that sounds so interesting. So how long has this been in existence?
So we started just back in March, so it isn't very long. We've hit about 9 months right now. But we minted about 1.4 billion of these notes. And there's a fixed amount of them, so they never grow and they never shrink. And we do have the equivalent of miners, but the miners don't mine for new coins. They look for lost coins or coins that have been permanently lost, and they recover it. And when they recover a permanently lost coin, they can then keep that coin, and then they can pay. It helps them to pay for the services. And so the whole network is free. There's no fees. And because we don't have to track every transaction, we don't have to have 150 gigabytes of data. Our databases are very small and fit on very small servers. And so it's very efficient. There's no electricity usage or bandwidth usage. And it scales, and that we can just add more servers if we decide that we're going to split the coins if we need to bring the price down.
And So how much does it cost to buy a cloud coin right now?
Right now,
obviously,
it's about five cents.
It's 5 cents.
Yes.
So this is something that, as it gets more popular, it'll increase in value. Does it work like that?
So it's all based on supply and demand, and we think that we're going to create a lot of demand for our currency because Cloudcoin is the first money that can be imported into software directly. And this allows us to create all kinds of neat stuff, including a distributed bank. And so we're working with this company called risebank.com, and we can put a bank on everybody's desktop. And basically what that means is that you store your Cloudcoins on your computer. You can set up bill pay on an Excel spreadsheet that will make it so that the people that you want to pay will automatically get paid. You can receive money while you're sleeping, and it'll go into your bank and be taken ownership of. And we can even have it so that if you've got extra money that you want to invest, your bank will send it up to a Rise Bank, and then that money can be used to make investments, and that you'll even get some interest on that money. It could be quite a lot of money.
This isn't set up yet, though. This is
so right now. It's being developed right now, and we actually just got this video of our virtual reality set up. And so another thing that you can do is you can put on these virtual reality goggles, and you will find yourself in a virtual bank. You look around, you can see the ATMs and everything. And you can
go,
you can trade with other people in this virtual space.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can't do that with Bitcoin.
It's pretty far out there, Sean, I have to tell you. So what you're doing is you're trading your coins with people who are part of the system for services and goods. Is that accurate? I mean, I'm just trying to understand it for me and for everyone listening. So right now with Cloudcoin, it's a system that you can use as an exchange for services or goods.
That's right.
For people who are join in, who accept them.
That's right. There's something called an ICO, which means initial coin offering. And a lot of these other cryptocurrencies, what they do is they have this ICO. They sell these coins for dollar bills or whatever, and then they're supposed to put together these coins. But really, that's kind of a scam, because if you make your own money, you don't need to raise money. You've already got it. And all you need to do is make your money worth something. And so the process of making your money worth something is basically five different things. There's got to be administration, making sure people can't counterfeit it. There's got to be client software that allows people to use it. There's got to be liquidity so that you can basically buy it at stores and so that you can exchange it for dollars when you want that. And then there's got to be some kind of governance so that things can be changed if they need to be changed. And we've been doing all that stuff and paying for it all with our own coin.
Well, so this is like getting in at the beginning of a new type of currency.
It's not just the beginning, it's the beginning of the beginning. Because there's something called the S-curve. It's a technology curve. And when a new technology comes out, the first thing you get is this group of people that are called the innovators. And then it goes to the early adopters, and then kind of most people, and then the late adopters, and the people that are just not going to make changes at all. But right now, we are just, everybody that's using it, about 0.03% of the population have actually used a digital currency. Only 7% even know have heard of it and know what it is. Mm-hmm. And so it is the tip of the beginning of the beginning. And so I think there's, you know, if you are an innovator, you'll be in it right now.
And can this be copied by other people creating similar, you know, just like there's all these other cryptocurrencies out there that have been kind of modeled after the Bitcoin? Can this system be replicated or cloned by other people?
Well, Cloudcoin is the only currency that actually has a patent on a brand new technology that's starkly different than everything else. And so the answer would be no,
really?
They could not just copy and paste it. one of the differences, of course, is that I've come out as the leader of this, where Bitcoin did not have a public person that was that said, hey, this is my technology, this is what I did. And they basically released the code open source so that anybody could make a copy. And that's why we have thousands of these Bitcoin clones. We thought that was a bad idea. So we do have a patent on the technology.
All right.
That is granted to the Cloud Coin Consortium. Their job is to make Cloud Coins a global currency that everybody loves.
Well, so this is your vision. So you're creating a more democratic form of money, I would say. Was that?
Well, it certainly is not government based, and it's got some hard rules. And we think it's the most perfect money possible. That it is going to do what money is really supposed to do, and make sure that the people that are hard workers get that which they deserve, and to stop any kind of hackers from being able to come in and get value out of the system that they don't deserve.
So you've created a system that the government can't get its little claws into. There's no way for the government to be involved at all in the cloud-based model.
That's right. And so we've been actually doing experiments and testing in Venezuela. And in Venezuela, they're extending into communism, and they've got big problems where they can't even take their cell phones out of their houses because they'll get them ripped off, or, you know, they'll be robbed of them. And so we've developed technologies such as store in mind and transfer by whisper, in which, you know, just like data can be stored on paper dollars or gold coins or silver coins, or data can be stored on hard drives like with Bitcoin, we can also store data in our minds. And so we're actually able to store half of the coins in our minds, and we can transfer that data, that information, from person to person over the phone or face to face. And what this allows us to do is be able to carry money around in our minds. The government cannot get to that. They won't even know that it exists. They can't prove that it's there.
So what's happening in Venezuela with the cloud-based system that you've introduced? It's so interesting.
Well, as far as our tests go, right now we're creating a documentary down there, and we're showing kind of how currencies start and how they work. And we're going to show that at Freedom Fest, which is happening in July. But we do a lot of experiments. We try to figure out how can we get people to adopt a digital currency, and we figured it out there, and that is some secret information that we're not going to tell until we actually implement it, so that we have an advantage over the other currencies. But we think that by doing some experiments in Venezuela, we are far ahead of any other competition.
Wow, so you're operating as a true libertarian.
Absolutely. And so our money is actually mostly embedded in JPEG images. So if I want to give it to you, I'm going to give you a JPEG. Then you'll have that. And the pictures that we use are of, number one, John Locke, who is the basically founder of the liberal ideology. And we also have Thomas Jefferson, who took John Locke's ideas and put them into the Constitution and the United States government. We also have some other libertarians like Adam Smith, who is the one that basically figured out the free market. And we have some other philosophers like Ayn Rand, who's a very famous libertarian.
So let's give people some information if they want to learn more. If this is whetted people's appetite, if they want to get in at the beginning of the beginning, if they want to learn more about this cloud-based currency, let's give them some information, Sean, of where they can go and the website that has more information. And I think you're going to be giving them an offer as well, some cloud coins. So let's tell people about it.
That's right. So they might be interested in reading my book, and they can get a free copy of that by going to digitalfrontiernews.com and signing up for their newsletter. And when you sign up for the newsletter, you also get 5 free cloud coins, and that's going to be fun to play with. They're not worth very much, but if they went the way with Bitcoin, they might be worth thousands of dollars in the future. But that'll give you an idea of what digital money could be or is, or becoming. And that's digitalfrontiernews.com.
Well, that would be fun to do. Why not? People should actually go check it out, digitalfrontiernews.com. So if they sign up and they'll get some of these cloud coins and can see what they look like and learn more. And if those who are listening, think that this is, something that's worth investigating, who knows? You might be at the beginning of something amazing. And, they're definitely new innovative systems that are emerging in the world these days. I mean, we're on the verge of lots of paradigm shifts, and old systems are, in a sense, crumbling, and new paradigms are emerging. The thing is, when you're still operating out of the old, which paradigm is the one that's going to be sustained and succeed,
yeah.
Right?
Well, one thing that's certain is that this digital currency is going to give people an advantage in the marketplace over others. And so if you're doing any kind of business, you certainly want to learn about this, because if you don't, you might be left behind.
Yeah, so interesting. We have to be open to new ideas, new possibilities, and as I like to say, new paradigms of how the culture and society is working, and money is part of that. So, all right, everybody, go check out digitalfrontiernews.com. Learn more about what's on the leading edge. And maybe, pick up a few of your cloud coins. Who knows? It just may change your life. So, Sean, thank you so much for your information. It's been such an education. I really appreciate what you're doing, and you just have a really, a sincere way of talking about it and explaining it. So appreciate how you can do that for us,
Well, thanks for having me.
Down here on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been talking to Sean Worthington, digitalfrontiernews.com. Go check it out. You have been listening to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Spellman. And until next time, remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self, and we'll be talking to you soon. Bye for now.